I'm Luke Kinetic with the McCain Institute, and you're in the arena with leaders and citizens who are taking character-based action. Well, I'm honored to be in the arena with the Representative Brian Steil from Wisconsin. He's a freshman congressman who is not waiting around to get some things done. Well, we want to cover a lot of ground, but you know, really, let's dive right into it. You are advocating a follow-the-money approach on combating human trafficking.
Yeah, we have this big umbrella that is human trafficking as a problem, and we need to go, it's a multifaceted problem, we need a multifaceted approach to attack it. One piece of the puzzle is how do we break down the money laundering side, in particular internationally. So sometimes it's a local problem, we talk about that a lot with our local schools, high school counselors, high school teachers, local police. Sometimes it's crossing state lines, you need the FBI, and sometimes there's an international criminal approach to this. In those situations, one of the real things that we can do is when countries are applying for foreign aid, that we can hold countries accountable to make sure that they're standing in the fight against human trafficking with the United States and see what they're doing as it relates to illicit money laundering, in particular as it relates to human trafficking. And so that's one piece of the puzzle, but I think it's a really important piece. In my work, I serve on the House Financial Services Committee. I think there's an ability to take some of what I've learned there as it relates to our money laundering and our laws, apply it into the foreign aid side, and really try to get a win and one piece of the puzzle of attacking this broader problem.
It's a straightforward name to the bill, Exposing the Financing of Human Trafficking Act, and my understanding is it connects to the trafficking in persons reports that the State Department does. I think those come out in June. The next one's probably coming out here soon. I don't guess this next report will necessarily have the kind of reporting you're looking for in it, but then the one after that potentially?
Hopefully the one after that. So if this bill makes it, becomes law, passes the House, passes the Senate, signed into law, the next time we get a tip report, we're going to have a look at the illicit financing side as it relates to trafficking in persons.
And so, you know, let's sure hope, as big of a scourge this is internationally, that countries will come on board. And if they don't, there's, you know, a conversation to be had there as well. But when they come on board or show that they have come on board, what does that look like? I mean, how does that kind of, what would you envision there?
Well, first and foremost, let's have them, let's bring these reports when countries apply for foreign aid. I think we do that pretty well as it relates to terrorism, as it relates to drug trafficking. Let's get the same type of report out from human trafficking, as now we're starting to understand as a society and fully appreciate the problem that human trafficking causes. Let's get that report. Let's see what countries are doing. Let's see where there's room for improvement. But by highlighting it for countries that are applying for U.S. foreign aid, it puts it front of mind, and I think countries will alter their behavior on this just by the fact that they're going to have to report it.
There was an expert. His name's Adam Smith. That sounds like the economist who's long dead and gone, but who was on in the arena months ago talking about the Magnitsky Act and how that's become so effective at taking on terrorism and international crime. It strikes me that this is kind of cut from the same cloth.
Sounds like it follows a familiar pattern.
I want to get kind of at the inspiration behind this. So, you know, this is very focused internationally. You mentioned this isn't just an international issue. Why did you choose this as one of your main initial focuses in Congress?
I spent time right after I was elected traveling across southeast Wisconsin, in particular talking to members of our law enforcement community. And one thing I heard time and again was the impact that human trafficking was having in our communities. And then stepped back and had conversations with my colleagues here at the national level. And then I earned a position on the House Financial Services Committee. So you start to break that down, and I thought, okay, I can leverage my position working on the House Financial Services Committee as it relates to money laundering. I can work where it's important to my home community. And in a period of time of divided government, we need to find things to work on to bring people together that we can actually get done and get across the line. And human trafficking impacts all 435 House districts. This isn't parochial just to the Northeast or to the Midwest or to the South. This is everywhere in the United States of America. It's not partisan. It's not Democrat or Republican, liberal or conservative. It's a piece of policy that I think makes sense, addresses part of the problem. Somebody needs to carry the water to get it done. And so I looked and thought, this is a spot where I can make an impactful difference. And it has a real shot at getting across the line, even during a period of divided government. And so that was a big piece of the motivation to pick up this and to run forward with it.
So you announced it, I think, in the midst of law enforcement and other important stakeholders, if that's the right word, in Kenosha, in Wisconsin, and then you're getting support, right? I mean, this is moving out.
Yeah, I use this to a certain extent. I use it even as an opportunity just to go have conversations with my colleagues on the House floor. You accidentally turn on C-SPAN late at night and you see kind of the House members milling about. That's the real opportunity to go have conversations with your colleagues. You know, it's great to check in kind of on how kids' Little League games were going, but I enjoy talking about policy and legislation more than anything. And so to me, it's an opportunity to go have conversations with my colleagues, Democrats and Republicans, and build up support for substantive legislation. And so we're north of 30 co-sponsors so far. You know, we're approaching 10% of the House. We're going to keep marching forward until we get everyone on board. You know, I have the entire Wisconsin delegation, Democrats and Republicans, and then branching out, introduce this with Madeline Dean from the suburbs of Philadelphia, a Democrat. And so we're building up support, you know, broad picture, Democrats, Republicans, geographically across the board. And that's what it's going to take to get this done. And so I spend my time just having those conversations with my colleagues, leveraging some of my background on the financial services side, and understanding for everybody how important of a topic this is.
And I mean, you're looking at across the board, the spectrum of human trafficking. So it's labor trafficking, it's sex trafficking. It's not just this particular area. It's just kind of this scourge of trafficking.
Absolutely. We saw an indictment just a couple of weeks ago by the U.S. Attorney out of Milwaukee for agricultural laborers who were being trafficked in Racine County, right in the heart of the congressional district. This came out after I had introduced the bill. So you see it on the agricultural side, on the labor side, you see it on sex trafficking. There's an across-the-board issue going on, and so where we can go and follow the money, where this is connected to these some of these large international criminal gangs, I think we have a real opportunity to make a real difference.
Shifting gears a little bit, although not really, because this strikes me as that you're using courage and character to take this on. There's not, to me, any kind of obvious, oh, gosh, I do this. There's just an immediate benefit or, you know, this is the way to easily get reelected, take it on this issue or anything like that. Who are leaders, either in Congress or outside Congress, that have inspired you, their kind of courage and character? Where do you draw inspiration from?
You know, sometimes I look to our local law enforcement community as to what they're doing day in and day out as it relates to this problem, but also others across the board. Where you see these men and women putting on their police uniform and going out not knowing what that day is going to look like as they head out, but willing to do it to make our community safer. And I look at some of their actions and think that's the type of commitment and courage that we need to see. And then you see political leaders who are also willing to step up and do what they think is right. And you kind of take, you know, a little bit of guidance from both sides of that to be able to pick up the mantle on this bill and try to drive it forward.
We talk about the McCain Institute being proudly part of Arizona State University and perfectly placed in Washington, D.C., and for, you know, a couple of reasons. I think it is important to be in Washington, have your presence, and to be part of the right conversations and driving the right conversations, but it's also pretty important to be connected to some other place than Washington, D.C., I think you can offer. What's it like to represent the heartland in Washington, D.C., or to Washington, D.C., or in Congress?
It's a great opportunity that folks back home in Wisconsin gave me to be their voice in Washington. And so I think I can bring to the table a bit of a Wisconsin style of conversation. I think there's an aspect of folks from the Midwest and from throughout the United States, not just on the East and West Coast, that bring a bit of a dialogue of how do we get things done working together. And I think I look back in part on my business background, having spent the last 10 years working in the manufacturing side, you know, you got to get a deal done to make any progress. I mean, every time we would work to sell a product, you still got to reach a deal with your customer. You got to reach a deal with your supplier. You can't just scream on your side and hope that the other side completely caves. You got to figure out where there's areas that you can work together. This bill, I think, is a piece of that.
So I want to pick up on that. You talk about your time in the private sector and then how you've translated that to now. I think you know, people who've run things, I think, look at the world a little bit differently. You know, maybe just my opinion. I think it's shared elsewhere. So is that kind of what you've brought? You kind of see how things work, how you need to run things. I was just at an event with former Senator Bob Kerry, and he talked about the importance of that really in the context of going on to be a university president. About, you have to have in the back of your mind of how to move things forward, how to make things work. Is that some of what you bring to to your approach?
I like to bring that to my to the approach. I often think about the process that's getting us there. And so the manufacturing hat goes on sometimes, and you look at what is often a bad product getting produced out of Washington. In the manufacturing sector, if you produced a bad product, the first thing you go is look at the process that got you here, and then try not to repeat the same process again. Sometimes we see Washington frustrated with the product, often maybe the federal budget, for instance, and then go back and repeat the exact same process again and be shocked that they're frustrated again with the final product. I think there's a real opportunity to look at the process that's getting us to these end results, go back, make adjustments, and try to ultimately get better results for the American people.
Communication is pretty important anywhere, but in the manufacturing side of things and business and the like, we live in such a fragmented world today, right? I've read a stat that we get hit with the equivalent of 94 magazines of information a day. And for a congressman, I mean, you're here, but of course your district is most important. How do you communicate? How do you think through how to communicate on a given day or week?
Well, I spend a ton of time back home being available and accessible, having conversations with people. So out of the gates, for example, I've done nine town halls. We just open the doors. Anybody that wants to come, ask a question, have a conversation, make a suggestion, welcome to come. We've done hundreds of events now across the district, just opening the door and having that type of a conversation. I think that's really important to be able to be people's voice in Washington. You have to be the ears back home. You have to spend your time listening. And then in Washington, you got to spend time working and building relationships with your colleagues. Ultimately, to get anything through the House, you need 218 votes. And sitting here as a Republican in the minority means that you can't do that just with Republican votes. So you need to build up relationships, Democrats and Republicans, and then ultimately have that conversation how we're going to get some things done, this bill being a piece of that. Right? This might not be the transformative change that I think ultimately our country needs, but that transformative change is one piece of the puzzle that we need to work on. The other is, where are there small wins that we can get done and work together collaboratively in this period of divided government?
Hopefully this is on point. We had a colleague testify on the Hill last week and kind of just reminded me of the process, and you saw congressmen and women coming in and out of the hearing. So, you know, freshman congressman, how have you, and you probably were exposed to it before, but the hearing process, what do you think? What do you find most useful about it? Is it as useful as it could be, or is it what happens that's not really what, you know, in front of people like me that go see the hearing? Talk to the hearing process a little bit. I'm just struck by how, gosh, in and out, it's busy, your days get busy. You know, the hearings are terribly important.
The hearings provide a great opportunity, and then it's up to the members as to whether or not they take advantage of that opportunity. Sometimes you'll see people using it to grandstand for their positions or themselves. Sometimes you see it as what it's supposed to be for, which is actually an ability to provide some government oversight, to actually inquire for answers to questions that we need to know the answer to create better policy in the end. And so when members take the reading, take the time to understand the topic, come in, ask thoughtful questions, listen to the questions of their colleagues, they can be quite productive. If members take the same hearing and choose to take a different path, then that's a little bit more of smoke and mirrors rather than productivity. So I always try to bring the mindset of, what can I get out of this to end up with better public policy in the end? And so spend the time reading the material, having conversations with my colleagues, and then going in and asking questions that I ultimately want to know the answer to and think that needs to be known to the American people. But I think there's a real opportunity there at those hearings, and then it's up to any individual member as to how they leverage that opportunity.
That makes sense. And I would think financial services is an area where thoughtful questions and study would be very helpful.
Yeah, absolutely. And then you also see times where thoughtful questions are passed on to make broader political statements. You know, you look at examples with kind of these global systemic risks that sit inside some of our large banks. You know, in came the series of CEOs. You know, the questions, there was a lot of potpourri rather than questions about what is the real risk that these banks pose economically. And so sometimes you see these opportunities to ask thoughtful, intelligent people questions that could be really helpful to understanding the risk and how we could create better policy. And then you see the grandstanding. And in other instances, you see people doing the right thing and leveraging their committee assignments to really try to perform and get better policy.
So kind of a standing final last question, probably our final last question. I reserve the right to ask another one if you say something really interesting. But kind of the next, say next generation, but really others, you know, maybe it's somebody that's out there in the private sector now thinking about that transition. Maybe it is someone at a university, but, you know, trying to get into the arena like you have. Kind of your advice on how to go about it or how to think about it or maybe something they wouldn't think about.
I mean, the folks that are outside the political world are exactly the people that need to step up to the plate and get involved. And there's many ways to get involved. Running, obviously, one of them. But you can also get involved at your local level, you know, in other people's campaigns. And the earlier you get involved, the more of an impact you can have, which is often my conversation with people, right, is your vote is more impactful often in a primary than in a general election, and ironically, more people vote in the general sometimes than the primary.
Right.
The earlier and the more impactful you make yourself, you can make a real difference. But I think there's a real need to bring people in that don't have a career in politics, but that come in with some core real-world private sector experience, have worked in a business, have seen how jobs get made, have seen the impact of policies in Washington, D.C., and their real implications, often unintended consequences. Those individuals are who we need to seek out to step up and to serve our nation, to continue the American idea.
So, okay, I will think of one more question. What do you think the next year holds for you? Is that a fair question? What do you...
Yeah, some of this is kind of, you know, following where I see opportunities to be impactful. And so I'm always looking at where can I be impactful in this environment of kind of highly partisan environment, divided government? And so I'm continuing to look for areas where I can place my time and energy to make an impactful difference. And so out of the gates, I identified this bill as it relates to financing and human trafficking. But I'm having conversations with my colleagues and others about what's the next item that I can pick up where we can actually make a difference, not just grandstand on topics, but actually substantively have an impact.
And, you know, I'm not trying to go off script here, but you had spent time in D.C. before, to be fair, but your days stay pretty full, but when you're outside of that, you know, I guess social, I didn't see you at the congressional soccer game. I don't know if I'll see you at the congressional baseball game, but what are some of your outlets if you're interested, you know, if you're willing to share?
If you get a Wisconsin winter, you're going to find me out cross-country skiing. So it gets cold in the snow. I love to go out cross-country ski. That's one of my outlets. In the summer, you'll probably find me bike riding. I love to go out and pedal bike and kind of get a workout in that way. When I get my workout in, that's kind of my time. Usually I get my heart rate up and we're going, and it's hard to think about all the stuff that you got to do next. You just get to think about putting one foot in front of the other during your workout. So that's probably my favorite thing. And so I love the cold in Wisconsin. And I love our summers. And so you usually will find me outside.
Very good. Congressman Stile, we really appreciate you being in the arena. It's exciting to see this bill. I know our combating human trafficking team wanted me to give you a shout out, and they appreciate what you're doing here. We hope you'll let us keep tabs on you and maybe invite you back to update us down the line.
Thanks so much. Thanks for having me.
This podcast is produced by Patrick McCann and Justin Kessler. If you like what you hear, please subscribe, tell your friends, or leave a review.